Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature center paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And tonight...
Hello.
Oh, yes. Say hi, David.
Okay, hello.
Yes.
I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Tonight, we are going to talk about gardening. And I've been looking at the backyard fairly often. And we haven't done anything with it yet. Initially, we had this little spike of warm weather with warmer temperatures in the 70s during the day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's, you know, let's go shopping. Let's go, you know, and I started going online and looking at various
good
places.
Good old garden.
Yeah. And then
it got chilly.
So it's good that we didn't because... We've had some, after that, there were some pretty cold temperatures.
I mean, last week we got below freezing at night.
Right.
In Virginia.
Yeah, so it's just as well that we didn't. And, you know, when you order plants from places online, like the various gardening type companies, they're pretty good about not shipping your plants until the danger of frost has passed.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, today's April 15th, so it's not likely we would have received anything by now anyway. Rarely have we ever run into a problem with some place we've ordered from, and then they inadvertently, you know, they send it out, and then inadvertently you end up with a hard frost after that. It just doesn't happen like that around here. So, we're talking about gardening of
mm-hmm.
all different types and the kind of plants that are more common and less common for magical and medicinal and culinary purposes. There is a lot of overlap. Not exclusively, it's not 100%, but there does happen to be a reasonable amount of overlap with many plants that are more common.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight I'm not going to talk about anything more exotic, like plants that are only grown or native to like tropical parts of the world or...
Right.
Plants that produce resins, there's no way you can grow that plant here in the United States. So,
or
you know, like...
super invasive things.
Or even the invasive things.
Or that one type of root, medicinal root, that can only be grown in this one county in England or something like that, you know. So, or that you'll have to, like, search for online, and it'll be, like, you know, $50 for a little sprout, you know. So, we're not going to talk about that stuff tonight.
What we're talking about are plants that you should be able to find most places. Now, not every single solitary thing. It is worth noting that some of the herbs that I have listed, you might have to order from someplace. I'm not entirely sure. It really depends on... what kind of plants are available to you in the different kinds of garden centers that are in your particular area. It's not impossible to do that, but, again, it's not going to be a 100% thing for a few of these, but you should be able to find it for most of these. And I thought I would start by talking about... common plants that do end up having a number of different uses. They are what many would call culinary. Some of these also have overlaps with healing purposes. And it's worth noting that if you're depending on the books that you look at, you look into, nearly all plants are going to have some sort of magical or spiritual association with it. And the most common plants that you can find at nearly every garden center or even stores like Lowe's or whatnot would be common culinary herbs like rosemary, thyme, basil, your various mints, and there are a variety of them, dill, lemon balm, oregano, although it's worth noting that while it can be used in magical work, I don't see a lot of spell work recipes for it, but it does have some magical uses. You've also got the plants that are used in teas like chamomile. And then there are ornamentals. They're not technically culinary, although it is worth noting. You can make lavender tea. I personally find it a little bit odd tasting, but not poisonous, and you can do it. I would classify that as more of an ornamental plant or a flowering plant, definitely. And it does have some medicinal uses attached to it. Also included in this is the ornamental plant called patchouli. And I don't know offhand whether you can ingest it. I'm inclined to think maybe not. But it's very aromatic. It's grown in yards. And, I mean, how many of us have ever walked into some earthy, pagany, witchy, new agey, spiritual type store, and one of the first scents that you smell with incense is likely to be patchouli. The source of it is a plant. It's an annual. It's grown. It can be grown as an annual in most parts of the United States and other parts of northern and probably southern hemisphere as an annual, but it may be able to be grown as a perennial in other places, maybe tropical or subtropical climates. So those are certainly the most common. That's not the exclusive list. Other common plants that are routinely used in magic, again, magical / witchcraft / spiritual purposes, and I'm deliberately using those terms kind of vaguely. It's, you know, your own personal practice, whatever tradition you follow is what it is. And for many people, not everybody, many people, there's work with plants that have some involvement in people's practices. And so some of these would include plants like coneflower. Another term for it is purple coneflower. It's also called echinacea. That is the source of our echinacea. Mugwort, yarrow, nettles, and I have a little asterisk by nettles because you can harvest the leaves of nettles, and you can ingest them, but they really have to be boiled first because the stalk and definitely the mature leaves of nettles have these teeny weeny tiny little, I wouldn't use the term furry, and they're not spikes, but they are these little tiny hairs on them that are very irritating to the skin. But when you cook it, you can ingest it. You can make a tea out of it. You can cook nettles and add it to soups, the nettle leaves. And it does have a lot of medicinal uses. But it is used in magical practice as well. There's also comfrey, which is definitely used as a medicinal plant. Vervain, St. John's wort, angelica, pennyroyal. And again, these are the more common medicinal herbs that are out there that you can find at many garden centers in a variety of places. Now, wormwood, as far as I know, well, it can technically be ingested in very small amounts. Don't recommend it. It is known to be one of the original older components, herb components that was added to the liquor that is called absinthe. Yeah. And it is said to induce some visions and hallucinations.
Okay.
So I do add it to the list, because you can find it in some garden centers, but it is not necessarily going to be something strictly to be ingested, but I do have it on the list. There's also a plant that you can find in the wild, but we have found it in garden centers, and it's definitely got multitudes of magical uses, but it's not necessarily a plant that you can ingest, as far as I know, and it's chinquefoil.
No.
It's spelled CINQUEFOIL, and I think some of the other...
Also known as five-finger grass.
Also known as five-finger grass, and I add it here because you can include it as a type of ornamental ground cover plant, for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily edible, but it just kind of, it should fit in somewhere.
Yeah, it has cute, nice little flowers.
It is cute. If you grow it in areas of your yard that has at least partial to full sun, it will over time spread, although I only see little bits of it left in our own backyard. Originally, we had it growing in our garden many years ago, but we had to do a reset on our garden, and some of them did end up growing in the backyard, but in the lawn. But I haven't seen it, but I haven't looked for it hardcore lately. And then there's flowers. Many of these flowers are thought, you know, by most people to have just purely ornamental value. But it is worth noting that a number of flowers that we commonly see planted in people's yards do have a variety of magical uses, like rose. And I think any type of variety of rose plant that you can find out there is going to have the same general type of magical properties.
Sure.
Again, now rose is a shrub. It's not a a single flowering plant. It's not a smaller plant. Same thing with lavender. That grows into a shrub. Lilac grows into a big bush. I included magnolia, but it's magnolia is a tree that is grown usually in the southern states of the United States.
Yeah, we have them up here in Virginia and D.C., but I don't think magnolia really does well much further north
than
around here in Northern Virginia, D.C. area.
Right. Other plants that are flowering plants that people have are foxglove, lilies and irises, marigolds, aster, and there's a number of different varieties of aster plants, tulips, daffodils, some of these, poppies and pansies, some of these are annuals, many are perennials, though. So, you know, like roses, lavender, foxglove, camellia, geranium, all your various bulb flowering plants. The aster, we got an aster, I bought an aster last year, and it has started to come back. I put it in a great big pot. Tulips and daffodils do too, although you're supposed to dig up tulips after they bloom, and we never do, and so
they
don't last. And the only ones that last in people's yards tend to be hybrids. So, again, those are just a few examples. If you... And again, I'm using more common examples of plants so that people have something they can kind of start with and build on. And these are plants that I know for sure most people should be able to find in garden centers. And again, you know, with the technology we have now and the internet, most of us are able to utilize that as a way to buy plants online as well.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have these many different websites out there years ago, but we certainly do now, and it's definitely a source that can be utilized if you can't find something else. And if you can't find the plants in already sprouted form, a lot of places do sell seeds for a variety of these as well. I mean, certainly bulbs, you can find bulbs many different places. So that's a basic list of examples of kinds of plants that you can utilize for a variety of purposes. Again, you can organize your garden strictly by what is ornamental versus culinary versus medicinal, if you like to grow and use herbs medicinally. And then you can start playing around with some of these different kinds of ways to organize what you can utilize in your backyard. And I'm at the end, we'll talk about things that do grow well in pots for people in smaller dwellings like apartments with or without balconies, townhomes
without
with small
yards.
Patios,
yeah.
You know, condos, etc. But one place to start that I think is an easy way to organize what you want to use your plants for is by element. And I'll back up a little bit and talk about elemental associations with plants. There are, and one of the first authors we ever read about when it comes to the magical uses of plants, and we're not just talking about herbs and flowers, I mean all kinds of plants, even the stuff we eat and even trees, is Scott Cunningham. He's not the only author out there. There have been others that have written things after the fact, and some have similar types of associations, some are different. And the source of, one of the big sources that Cunningham used to write this book, and the original printing was back in the 80s. He utilized something from older ceremonial magical practices that was written by somebody else hundreds of years ago. It's called the Doctrine of Signatures. Mm-hmm. And the Doctrine of Signatures is something that magical practitioners used to separate out properties of plants based on what they looked like, maybe their flower petal structure, the shape of leaves, if it was something that could be ingested, maybe it was also the shape of the leaves. A big component of that was also the medicinal uses, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where a lot of these initial things came from. It's certainly written out about in Cunningham's book, and again, other authors, and you can find things online that use or that include the element that a plant, a food, an herb, a root, a flower, a tree is associated with. So I think one of the easiest things to do if you're wanting to set up a garden is to do it by elemental association. Air, earth, fire, water. Don't be surprised if you find there are fewer plants associated with air because it is a little harder. But there are plenty of plants there that are. Many are associated with earth. Many are associated with water. And there's a number of plants that are also associated with the element of fire. And you can create a garden, and I've seen it done a few different ways. A number of folks have written about it online, where you can either set it up in a grid pattern where, again, if you have a backyard that is amenable to this, each area of the backyard can be associated with a particular element that's associated with that cardinal direction, east for air, south for fire, et cetera, although that is only one way of doing things.
Right.
Another way to do it is to just have separations kind of in spokes of a wheel.
Yeah, I've seen that, the round design, where it's like round, but like four slices of a pie kind of idea, where you have plants from the different, that orient with specific elements in different quadrants, you know, the eastern quadrant are the air plants and the southern quadrant are the fire plants and stuff, and there's different ways of doing that. So there are a number of ways you can kind of mix things, kind of situate things like that, yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
I like that if you're not terribly, again, if you're limited in your space, if you want, and if you only have room for a few basic things that have a multitude of purposes,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good place to start because it's super easy to do. And then you have all these overlaps of magical uses that are related to things elementally speaking.
Right.
I mean, you can even make it super general and have masculine herbs, and you could separate your garden out simply by masculine herbs versus feminine herbs.
Put the boy plants on one side and the girl plants on the other side.
The boy and the girl.
Like in the middle school gymnasium right before the dance when they're all feeling really.
Although, you know, as you word it that way, I'm like, but many plants self-sow. They, you know, they fertilize themselves. So, you know.
Right.
There goes that out the door. There's also, yeah, so that's why, you know, to some extent, I like the idea of the associations, but I tend to kind of look askance at quote-unquote masculine or feminine herbs, because how do you have a, right, how do you have an association when you know that? And to back up even farther, to put a little bit of science spin on this, most of the plants that people use are plants that are flowering plants. They're angiosperms. Mm-hmm. And angiosperms evolved on the planet to be able to fertilize themselves. Although not all angiosperms can do that. Many of them can. There's a male part of the plant with the pollen. There's a female part of the plant that is kind of tucked in below where the flower petals are, where the ovary is, and that's where the little eggs or ovules are. And when the pollen meets up with the ovule, then you have the production of the seed and a fruit of some sort afterward, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So where does the masculine and feminine come in? And especially as with these evolutions and changes in how people see themselves, with people that are not binary,
right,
with people that are transgender, the idea of that tends to kind of fly out the window.
It kind of does, and it kind of comes from the older association. If you look at some of the older books, like Cunningham, which is a great resource, and some of the others from that time or before that discuss plants and herbs and stuff, and you'll see that they'll categorize plants as having a masculine affinity or a feminine affinity, and that's kind of from that. But as time has gone on and people have, I guess, the evolution of gender identity, I don't know if it's a way to put it, but, I mean, you know, that has become more mainstream and more discussed, talked about, awareness, higher awareness, more accepted, all that, you know, then this idea of, you know, these are the masculine plants, the feminine plant aspects, it really kind of doesn't track as well anymore.
No.
And really, and like you said, biologically speaking, like what's one in particular
that fertilizes itself?
No, that is identified as masculine or feminine.
Oh, okay, let me go.
Right, give us some resources, some
options.
Okay. We can delve into that a little bit.
How about,
Yeah.
Honeysuckle.
Oh, yeah. So what is that associated with? Is that a...
It's supposed to be a masculine herb.
A masculine plant.
A masculine plant.
But it flowers. Okay.
So do clove, you know, clove trees.
Yeah.
Allspice. Yeah.
So from a scientifically biological speaking aspect with these plants, they're not boy plants and girl plants, you know. So this whole association really has nothing to do with the scientific aspects of the plants at all.
If you look back at gender, it's very binary. You only belong to one or the other.
Right.
With these plant associations. And then if you look even farther at the list of plants that have quote-unquote masculine associations, these are ones that are spicy or have a little bit of a bite to it.
Right.
Like allspice, ginger, clove.
And the feminine plants are more calming, soothing, less...
Right. And I don't know about y'all listening in. I know plenty of women that are, you know, not... What's the old-fashioned term? Not shrinking violets.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's some pretty spicy, saucy women that we know that if you went strictly by these associations, well, then it wouldn't match up.
Right.
So we just kind of have to put that giant disclaimer out there. And so if you see that in a book, I would, you know, hey, you might find that affinity. But for many people, they may not. It's you know, you might, your reaction might be more of a meh.
Right.
Meh. So.
But these are also written and defined and stuff during a time when, you know, men were supposed to be more aggressive and the breadwinners and out doing the things, and women were supposed to be less so. And this is, you know, some of these, a lot of these associations came around before the women's liberation movement kind of happened.
That's
too.
That's true.
And stuff where women should stay home and, you know, be quiet and, you know, be non-offensive while the men could go out and do all that stuff.
Right.
And, yeah, times have changed.
A whole lot. So back to some of these elemental plants, weren't some of the ones that I previously mentioned. And I mean, we could do a whole show just on magical gardening of food associations and
yep.
and that too. Maybe
yep.
we'll do that at some point in the future.
Yep.
But talking about just plants, for example, with regard to the element of air,
okay.
your various mints are associated with the element of air. So is lemongrass, lemon verbena, lavender, parsley, which is, I find interesting, pine, and I'll talk about trees here in just a few minutes. What were some others that I added to this list? I didn't add dandelions because it's a quote-unquote weed, but it's edible, and it does have magical uses, so I wouldn't necessarily get rid of those if you have them grown in your yard.
Right.
Unless your dogs peed on them, and that's a different story.
It's a weed because, you know, lawns are unsightly with dandelions in them and stuff. It's like, really? They're
right.
I don't think so.
Right.
Although a warning about, you mentioned mint. If you plant mint in the ground, you'll have it forever.
And it'll take over
it
your
spread.
Garden.
So, and it spreads.
And they all do it. It doesn't matter what
yeah.
the variety of it is.
Mint families. So mint in a pot is a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And they'll overwinter just fine. element of fire would include angelica, and typically when people use angelica for magical stuff, it's the angelica root.
Mm-hmm.
Basil, one of our favorites. Okay, people do not intentionally plant this in their garden, I don't think.
But it shows up anyway.
Poke root.
Oh, pokeweed.
Poke. You might end up, especially in the southern part of the United States, it's all over the place.
Don't eat the berries.
Yeah, don't eat the berries because they're poisonous. But you can use the berries to make an ink. One that put this on the list is coriander,
mm-hmm.
Dill, any spicy plant. So if you like to grow, and again, this is a food, but still. If you like to grow peppers, and they typically grow in most parts of, many parts of the U.S. as an annual, although there are,
yeah,
I know peppers can be, the little tiny peppers can be grown on bushes and are not annuals. I don't know that much about them because, well, I can't really eat them, so we don't grow them.
Yeah.
But dill is, ginger, what are some of the others that I mentioned? Oh, interestingly, pine is in the air and the fire categories, so, you know, make what you will of that.
It have to do with how you use it.
Maybe.
I think so.
Maybe. Pennyroyal is associated with fire. So are sunflowers. So is cedar and juniper.
Okay.
They're not the same species of tree, although many people call eastern red cedar a cedar, and it's not really a cedar, it's a juniper. Our favorite, one of our favorites, rosemary.
Uh-huh.
We love our rosemary. That is also associated with
fire.
Yeah. Daffodils associated with water. Again, I'm just going to call out a few here. The camellia bush flower is associated with water. some of the others that we had that I had mentioned. Oh yeah, lily. All lilies are associated with water. So are irises.
Mm-hmm.
The myrtle tree is associated with the element of water. Rose, you know, all of your rose bushes and plants are associated with water.
Okay.
So, oh, and yarrow. And I also included yarrow as a, because you can use it medicinally, but it's also, it's a flowering plant.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's grown ornamentally, and it's definitely grown, you know, for various magical purposes as well. Also, of the flowers that people often grow ornamentally, foxglove and gardenia are also associated with the element of water.
Okay.
So, just a few out there. And then, oddly, you know, again, this is a, keep in mind when this book was initially written, plants that are associated with the element of earth include vervain, vetiver, mugwort, patchouli, primroses, and then, oh, and also, again, honeysuckle. It shows up more than one place.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about. So, just a few examples. There's a much larger list that encompasses many plants that we eat. So, keep that in mind as well for your, you know, gardening escapades. I focused on culinary herbs and medicinal herbs and flowers. I didn't even get into foods because it's a giant subject. And, you know, that kind of dovetails into cooking and, you know, magical cooking where you can incorporate a number of different foods and charge it with a very specific magical purpose. So that's just the elemental part of things. And I know that Cunningham does it. I think other authors do it too, where there are a number of herbs that are also associated with certain deities. And a lot of this has to do with their folklore uses.
Yeah.
And so one thing, and it, you can do it, you may not find a giant laundry list of herbs or flowers associated with a deity that you want to work with. It's also worth noting that you may not find too many plants associated with gods, and you definitely tend to find more associated with goddesses. I'm kind of not surprised by that because of the whole mother goddess kind of association
uh-huh.
amongst many different cultures and pantheons. So, got to put that out there. But there are some here and there. It's also worth noting that if you employ the doctrine of signatures, and you look at qualities of a plant and then look at some of the mythos and magical associations with a variety of deities from different pantheons, I don't think it's that difficult to make that leap that there would be some plants that would be associated with some gods. It's also worth noting that as you look at these and you start researching this stuff on your own, look at where these plants originated. Many of our culinary herbs came from various places in Europe, from tropical climates, from the Mediterranean, and from Central and Southeast Asia. And in fact, there are plants that we eat that came from far away. Yes, there are many New World plants, but a lot of the plants that we eat now did not originate here. That's for sure. So some of the more common deities that I've seen that have plants, more than one plant associated with them are Artemis, Hecate. There's some associated with Demeter. Some with Persephone. I've seen a few with Mercury. I've seen a handful, like less than five. Again, this is the Cunningham book, and I did not look at every single solitary plant. I was trying to cross-reference what I had already been looking up and looking for with regards to common plants. But there are more. There are some associated with the goddess Isis, some with Thor. I've seen a handful with one or two with Odin, and then there's a few others. But again, if you look at the mythology associated with a deity, what you read in one book written a few decades ago certainly isn't going to be the be-all and end-all. One good example of this is with oak trees. And there are some goddesses associated with it, but there's also, Odin is associated with, there's a lot of druidry associated with oak trees. So you might find something more wide and varied than this one book that we've used as our reference for tonight. But some of the plants that we've seen, that I saw in my research about, we started off with are Hecate, or Hecate, depending on how you pronounce her name. Mint, garlic, oak trees are associated with her. I also have included mandrake, but I don't typically see mandrake root being grown in gardens. I just thought I would throw that out there.
Right.
Artemis is associated with any of the plants from the Artemisia family.
Right, like bugwort and tarragon and wormwood.
Yeah. Also, myrtle, myrtle trees.
Uh-huh.
And no, I don't know if crepe myrtle is a myrtle per se.
I'm not sure.
Because myrtle is its own species of tree, too.
Right.
Yeah. Rue, the plant rue.
Uh-huh.
That has a whole boatload of magical uses. I know of people that have grown rue in their backyard. But
yeah.
I don't know how easy it is to get any place.
Okay.
Unless you'd have to ask your pagan peeps and see who might have
get
it.
Get some seeds or something.
Yeah. Or if you're crazy, you can get a cutting of a plant they put in a little pot.
Right.
And, you don't have to bring a great big plant from, let's say, Circle. It's grown in a place that they didn't really want it to grow.
Right.
And they put it in a little plastic pot or whatever it was that they put it in to give us.
The mugwort we brought home? we put it in a baggie. We put the roots part and stuff in a baggie.
Was it in a baggie?
Yeah. And we drove it home. Yeah. And then we planted it. We put it in a pot and then later on we put it in the ground.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it grew for a while, like the rest of the year in a pot. And when it was starting to get cold, we put it in the ground, I think.
Or put it in the spring. One or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah.
But that was quite a few years ago.
And
it's doing its thing.
It's coming back.
Yeah, it's coming back. We have it in the far corner, and we give it enough room, we don't tend to grow things around it. So that is an offspring of the Circle's mugwort. From years ago.
Yep.
Plants associated with Venus, the goddess, you can also, I think it's an easy association to also put or associate them with Artemis, Aphrodite as well. And so that would include marjoram.
Yep.
Again, the myrtle tree, pine, vervain, and violets.
Okay.
And it doesn't specify what kind of violets. There are violet plants that you can get. There are also wild violets. They're typically a purplish blue, little tiny purple bluish flowers, heart-shaped leaves. They grow throughout many parts of the eastern U.S., and now they're all over our backyard.
And our side yard and our front yard.
Yeah, there's a whole
thing. And some of the neighbor's yards.
Oh, yeah, that too.
But I was also, well, I got a kick out of it. It's like Athena. The plants associated with Athena are, there's fiery ones. Cinnamon, citrus, cedar, cypress. Oak again, olive, patchouli, there's some more air, dragon's blood, are Athena-related plants.
Interesting. Again, only a few that I saw, again, from this initial list that I'd kind of culled together.
Uh-huh.
Pennyroyal, poppy, and rose. Are, again, it doesn't specify the species of rose plant, and there are many of them, associated with Demeter.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure that list is much longer.
Demeter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, because it's also associated with mint and the pomegranate, of course.
Of course.
You can't forget the pomegranate. Wheat, barley.
Yeah, there's a lot of grains. A lot of grains. So you can certainly, if, let's say, one of these deities or even another one is a deity that you work with a lot that has become your patron goddess, that's one thing you can do is have an outdoor temple, if you will, and plant different plants that are associated with this goddess, and it becomes part of like a, you know, a permanent shrine. It's cool to be able to do things inside, but if you're able to do things outside, even if you don't have a big space and you're trying to figure out what you want to do with that space and you don't want to mess with, you know, the whole culinary gardening, let's plant tomatoes, you want to do something different, well, it's certainly something different that you could do. If you look in many places online and in magical herb books, you also see associations not only with planetary rulers, but more often you see them associated with the sun or the moon. You could also plant plants that are not only moon associated, but also that bloom at night.
Oh, yeah.
And your success at doing that is going to depend on what plants you want to try to plant and the part of the world that you live in. Obviously, if you live in a more southerly tropical climate, whether it's north or south of the equator, you can get away with growing a much wider variety of things that might have originated in another part of the world, but you can get away with growing in places throughout the Caribbean, in southern U.S. states, in different places, like Central South America, and even other parts of the world that has warmer climate, more months out of the year. Many of these plants can be grown in pots, but some definitely don't like to be grown in pots, and they just simply do better when they are loose and free.
Able to stretch their roots.
Stretch their roots. Some do put down deep roots, and that is something that you need to keep in mind. But there are some that you can grow in pots. So you don't have to spend huge amounts of money, and you can have maybe just one or two plants devoted to, you know, your deity that you work with, or maybe just one or two associated with each of the elements, or a few plants that are the ones that you're the most drawn to that you can grow in pots and take them indoors in the winter that are ones associated with specific magical intentions. And I didn't talk about any of that because many of these, again, it doesn't really matter whether it's a flower or one of these quote-unquote medicinal herbs,
yep,
or the culinary, many of these have a variety of uses. And, you know, a lot of times recurring themes you find are protection, purification, healing, luck, love, mm-hmm, fertility. Those are the biggies that you tend to see. Some might be associated specifically with money, some with helping with prophetic dreams, increasing psychic awareness, et cetera, et cetera. But you do tend to see fairly common themes with some of these. Now, I did leave this for last, and I wanted to talk about trees a little bit. Again, if you are in a place where you have, you may not even have a huge yard, but you have a little bit of yard, and it's just, you know, these blank, flat, open plots that have nothing but grass growing on them, and you want to simplify things, and maybe you want to just start with maybe planting a couple of trees.
Yeah. Space.
Yeah. And there are a wide variety of plants, that of trees, that don't necessarily grow super big. There are varieties of a number of these different plants. For example, yeah, there is crepe myrtle. There are pine trees, although many of them do grow bigger. Not all of them do. Maple trees, and while the standard red maple, sugar maple do grow big, there are other smaller varieties, like the Japanese maple, and that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
We've been off and on for years, we've been talking about putting a maple somewhere in the backyard, or eventually the tree we have in our front yard, which is an ornamental cherry, will have to be...
We're going to have to dig it out.
We'll have to dig it out.
It's been there. It's almost 30 years old. So it's getting to the point where, you know, we probably should, instead of waiting for it to start to fall apart on people's cars and houses. Yeah.
Right. There are also species of cedar trees. And you can get these at garden centers as well.
Yeah.
Cedar, for example, is associated with purification, protection, healing, and money. The bay tree, otherwise known as...
Laurel.
Yeah, bay laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Is associated with protection, psychic powers, healing, purification, and strength. Now, if you have the room in your yard and you want to grow a tree, it's a slow-growing tree, but you can do it. There's varieties of species of oak trees. Some grow bigger than others. Most of them are relatively slow-growing species, but oak trees are associated with protection, health, money, healing, luck. There's a number of things. Big old laundry list. Junipers. Otherwise known, again, as the eastern cedar, and there's different kinds of juniper trees. that you can also buy at garden centers. And juniper is associated with protection, health, love, and exorcism. Getting rid of the bad juju. Yes. Again, these are just a few. I chose more common species of trees that most people could find. So if they wanted to, they could do that. Now, there's also the American holly, which never grows very big.
Oh, yeah.
It also has magical associations. Related to that are holly bushes. Most of the holly bushes that you can find at garden centers.
Well, doesn't grow too big. American holly trees can grow to 40 to 50 feet high.
I guess when they have plenty of space to grow.
Yeah, they can really get pretty big.
Interesting. I've never seen, I've only ever seen them grow in mixed forest settings.
Yeah. So you have to really maintain it to keep it shorter and smaller? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or if it has competition in a forest,
perhaps,
it's not going to grow that big.
Right.
Like all the ones that we see grown in the forests around here.
Yep.
So, something to think about. But again, the cedars and the junipers, there are different varieties, and I know that there are smaller varieties of those as well. So those are good places to start. If you're allowed to do it, you can even put a few fruit trees. Again, we didn't talk about the whole food end of magic and magical associations, but there's all sorts of fruit trees. There are different citruses. There are apple, peaches, plums. And not only are they, they're kind of cool to grow, it does take time for them to produce fruit, but the trees in and of themselves, the leaves and the branches, can be used for a number of different magical things. So that is a quick and dirty introduction to ways that you can utilize basic plants in different ways to create something magical and meaningful for yourself. Again, whether or not it's in pots on a patio or in your backyard. And it's worth noting, again, we've mentioned this many times over the years, we live in a townhouse. We do have an end unit, so our property is a whopping 0.05 acres.
Yeah.
We don't have any trees growing in our backyard, so it's all been just open.
Right.
And we also don't have a balcony that shades any part of the backyard. So there's a big corner area, a large quadrant of our backyard that gets a lot of full sun. And we have experimented with a number of different things over the years. And so just because you don't have a large amount of space available doesn't mean that you cannot do something to grow plants that are, again, medicinal, magical in nature, and it really broadens your ability to connect with living things around you, and it can be a good gateway. It's a gateway drug. Plants are a gateway drug. Working with plants like this can also be a good gateway to opening working with plant spirit familiars and developing relationships with plant allies. And so it does not have to be the 200-year-old oak sitting in some deep forest for you to create and develop an association with a plant spirit ally that way. You can be a number of different plants. Doesn't have to be anything super exotic or hard to find either. So, oh, now David's looking at small trees. So, and we've, again, we've gone round and round on these discussions. Do we want to do this or do we want to do that? Well,
what's nice about having the big cherry tree in the front yard is we get the cherry blossoms in the spring, and they smell really nice, and we get a lot of privacy in that because it's also on the front of the house, so we get privacy from that, shade from the sun and stuff on that side of the house. But, you know, in the spring, after it blooms, we get flower petals everywhere. Sometimes it looks like it snowed on our front yard because it's covered with these flower, light pink flower petals. And now we're in the cycle of it's dropping its stems. So from the flower, we're losing,
right.
It's dropping stems. So our cars and our sidewalks and stuff are just covered in stems.
Yeah, from the flowers.
From the flowers, yeah. So it's, and there's still a lot of, they're covered, and there's still a lot of stems on the tree.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a thing.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of things you need to be mindful of when you're choosing trees, the size and where to put it,
uh-huh.
Or whether you go with something that's more of a shrub than a tree, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Yep.
Well, we would like to thank everybody who listened, and hopefully this will motivate people to start thinking about what is available to them, where would they live, and the kinds of things they can do in their own homes. So we'd like to thank Circle Sanctuary for allowing us to have this opportunity to present you with shows twice a month. And, yes, some of the things we have going on, I know that for us, the next big thing is at the end of the month, the last Thursday, we're going to have a full moon / Beltane ritual. Next week, Deborah Rose is talking with...
Well, Circle Talk on the
20th. Yes.
She will be talking with Reverend Juliana Russell, talking about the Pagan Academic Network, which is a Circle Sanctuary interdisciplinary organization that supports pagans in academia. Next, that's on next Tuesday. On next Wednesday, Selena is leading a conversation, a show. Her podcast, Nature Spirituality, will be Earth Day Meditations, because it's right on the cusp of Earth Day next week, talking about connecting with planet Earth locally and globally through nature walks, nature awareness, and such. And then on...
And Laura Gonzalez?
Laura, on the 26th, on Lunatic Mondays, she will have Dri Amandi talk about oils and tarot magic. And this coming Sunday on Nature Mystic, which is where we play reruns of some of Selena's past podcasts over the past 8, 9 years. This coming weekend, this Sunday, she'll be talking about celebrating Earth Day on the 18th, exploring ways of attuning to nature. Selena's kind of focusing on the Earth Day stuff because she was involved with some of the beginnings of Earth Day way back in the day.
In the very early 70s.
Like, getting it started.
Right.
Pretty amazing stuff. So, that's what's coming up for the next week.
Right.
Yeah.
So, thanks everybody for listening. And, what would you like, musically, what would you like to take us out with for
let's
the evening?
See. Oh, I know. The Greenwood Grove by Dave Thapard.
Okay.
Singing about the trees. So, okay. Good night.
Good night and many blessings.
Blessed be.
She's a new beginning, the rowan star with magic guarding, all the sight the future showing. Sweet willow sees her moon arising. Ash three realms he is touching. Hawthorn tells us the May is coming. Mighty oak with strength is standing. The holly on his chariot riding. Come follow me, come dance with me. Come with me to the greenwood groves of magic there to see the Lord of the Wild with his fairy kin. Deep within the greenwood grove, we'll dance the magic ring. Wise Hazel watches salmon feeding. Is ripe, intoxicating. I am the ivy, heed my warning. Yellow broom, I offer healing. Blackthorn sharp for death preparing. The elder is a life of learning. Further distant future showing. Come follow me, come dance with me. Come with me to the greenwood groves of magic there to see the Lord of the Wild with his fairy kin. Deep within the greenwood grove, we'll dance the magic ring.
On the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.